Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our program is designed for people learning English. So, we speak slowly, using a simple style and limited vocabulary. Today on the show, Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher. We also hear a report from Pete Musto. And we close the show with an American story. Today, we begin Paul's Case by Willa Cather. But first, here is Susan Shand.
People watching Hollywood awards ceremonies on television often see stars walk the red carpet in costly clothing. But the worldwide coronavirus has changed even Hollywood, America's movie production center in California. Red carpets of the future might be very different, if the custom happens at all. Photographers and fans stand along the red carpets while celebrities stop to have their picture taken. It is a usual part of publicity efforts that come with a new film opening. But social distancing may put a stop to it. Everybody is desperate to get back to a normal version where we get to be with people in person, said one Hollywood publicist who asked not to be identified. I don't see it coming back fully until we've got some kind of vaccine, the publicist said. A big test will come in July, when Christopher Nolan's film Tenet for Warner Brothers and Walt Disney's Mulan are expected to open. They will be the first big movie releases since the new coronavirus closed movie theaters worldwide. Movie production companies delayed the opening of many films until the end of 2020 or even 2021. Warner Brothers and Disney have not announced their plans for the opening of the two movies. Television's Emmy Awards usually take place in Los Angeles in September. Organizers have not said what they will do if social distancing measures are still in place. In Los Angeles, there are companies that plan red carpet events, like 1540 Productions. The business has planned more than 200 Hollywood movie openings. Now it is talking with several movie companies about ways to add social distancing. We took the red carpet and we had to re-envision how it would work, keeping people apart, said Craig Waldman. He is president of 1540 Productions. Usually, TV cameras and photographers are in a small space together. Now they will be separated by large, heavy pieces of plastic. Distance barriers will keep reporters at least 2 meters away from actors. Celebrities will not be able to talk to fans. Having a live fan element is going to be a thing for the future, once a vaccine is found, said Waldman. The number of cameramen and photographers on the red carpet will have to be decreased, and everyone will wear face coverings. I don't know that we will see Emmy-nominated actresses walking the Emmy red carpet wearing masks, said Hollywood reporter-writer Chris Gardner. The biggest unknown is whether important celebrities will attend these events. Mike Zimmet owns a New York security company. He works with people like actors Alec Baldwin and Lin-Manuel Miranda. He said tight security measures will need to be in place. I know one celebrity I'm protecting right now is staying away from everything, said Zimmet. He expects red carpets to return in New York in autumn or possibly winter. Zimmet said celebrities have to decide if your health, of the family and yourself, is worth it. Publicists now are holding movie openings online and talking to actors on Zoom or Skype from their homes. This method has worked well for films with small budgets because it has cut travel costs. Actors appear to like it as well. It's more like chit-chatting with a sort of new friend they have just met on their computer, said one publicist. But it lacks the excitement of a red carpet. It is quite strange, British actress Kristen Scott Thomas said on Zoom from her home. She was discussing her new film, Military Wives. It's a lot more comfortable because you're wearing your own dress, she said with a laugh. I'm Susan Shand.
In April, as the new coronavirus was attacking New York City, Susan Jones learned her older brother had been diagnosed with a blood cancer. Her brother's supervisor at work launched a campaign to help with medical costs. The supervisor set up a GoFundMe page on social media for donors. Jones shared it on Facebook. What happened next shocked her. Jones was sure her closest friends would support the campaign. She works for the American Ballet Theater, which is based in New York. And many of her coworkers, some she did not know very well, made donations. Their gifts came at a time of economic difficulties in a struggling dance community. Jones found herself asking, would the reaction have been the same just 2 months earlier, before the public health crisis? She was almost sure it would not. Instead, she thinks the desire to help shows, along with simple kindness, how people are working to make a difference. At a time of helplessness, she says, helping others makes a mark on a world that seems to be overwhelming all of us. People everywhere are trying to keep control of their lives, to preserve who they are, Jones told the Associated Press. Lori Santos is a psychology professor at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. She also teaches the school's most popular class to date, Psychology and the Good Life. Santos notes that lots of research shows helping others can often make us happier than spending that same time or money on ourselves. Taking time to do something nice for someone else, she says, is a powerful strategy for improving our well-being. Damian Escobar is a violin player living in New York. He stopped working as a traveling musician because of the coronavirus. One recent day, he was going to a neighborhood drugstore when he saw a homeless man outside. Escobar, who was once homeless himself, was about to give the man money until he recognized what the man was really seeking, a face mask. The man needed it so he could enter the store and buy water and supplies. Escobar also found that employees at a nearby parking garage were asking for extra masks. There was a huge need here, he said. He had already been getting protective equipment to emergency workers, raising $50,000 from a charity performance. Now he has turned to a new campaign called Masks for the Masses to get masks to homeless individuals and poor families. I'm essentially unemployed. I make my money on the road. If I weren't doing this, I'd probably be stuck at home battling depression, he says. They say once you get into the world of someone else, your problems don't really exist anymore. Catherine Lewis is an expert on the science of human behavior and the mind. She has often found people are happier when they can take action. In the work of trauma, we know that people who have good outcomes are the people who are doing something, she says. The hardest piece is when you are stuck, confined, frozen. There are a growing number of examples of people helping people. However, that does not mean that traditional philanthropy is in good shape. Sure, individuals and some nonprofits are stepping forward to help, says Marcia Stepanek, a professor at Columbia University in New York. But for the most part, she says, recent studies of nonprofits show that donations are notably dropping because of donors' concerns about the economy as well as the job market. Still, many individuals are finding, in the process of reaching out to others, not only satisfaction and purpose, but also perhaps a way to claim their identity. This is how Susan Jones sees it. Friends and coworkers have donated nearly $6,000 to her brother's care. She adds, I'm feeling deeply touched to be on the receiving end of that. I'm Pete Musto.
Today on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Igor in Russia. He writes, I'd like to speak with an American accent. Could you give me advice on how to improve it? Thank you so much. Yours sincerely, Igor, Russia. Dear Igor, an accent is more than simply the way one says individual words. It is also the way speakers use three things: intonation, pacing, and stress. Intonation is the rise and fall in one's voice when speaking. Pacing is how fast you are speaking. And stress is the word or words you play up or emphasize when you talk. If you want to sound more like an American when you speak, there are a few sounds that experts say make up the American accent. The thing most people notice is that many Americans pronounce the R sound at the end of words, like butter. And, in American English, the T in the middle of a word is often said like the letter D. Try making the R sound in these three words: better, door, poor. Another of these sounds is the short A sound you hear in words like cat. To make this sound, pull your lips back as if you are smiling, but keep your mouth open. Try making this short vowel sound in these words: dad, map, tag. Another sound you should watch for is the short O, as heard in the words bot and cod. Your lips do not need to be round to produce this O sound. Try saying this sound in mom, got, and pop. The most important way to improve your accent is to keep on speaking and listening to American English. Try to hear the rhythm or music of the language as you listen to Americans. The pace or speed should be slower than other accents. And it is not necessary to sound exactly like a native speaker. As long as you speak clearly enough to be understood, most Americans enjoy hearing a foreign accent. It makes you sound a little mysterious. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. I'm Jill Robbins.
Our story today is called Paul's Case. It was written by Willa Cather. Paul's Case will be told in two parts. Here is Kay Gallant with part one of the story.
Paul hated school. He did not do his homework. He did not like his teachers. Paul's father did not know what to do with him. His teachers did not know either. One afternoon, all his teachers at Pittsburgh High School met together with him to discuss his case. Paul was late. When he entered the room, his teachers sat waiting for him. He was tall for his age and very thin. His clothes were too small for him, but they were clean. He had a bright red flower in the buttonhole of his black jacket. One of the teachers asked Paul why he had come to the meeting. Paul said politely that he wanted to do better in school. This was a lie. Paul often lied. His teachers began to speak. They had many complaints. One said Paul talked to the other students instead of paying attention to the lessons. Another said Paul always sat in class with his hands covering his eyes. A third teacher said Paul looked out the window instead of looking at her. His teachers attacked him without mercy. Paul's eyebrows moved up and down as his teacher spoke. His smile never left his face, but his fingers shook as he touched the flower on his coat. At last, the meeting was over. Paul's smile got even wider. He bowed gracefully and left the room. His teachers were angry and confused. The art teacher spoke for all of them when he said there was something about Paul that he didn't understand. "I don't think he really means to be bad," he said. "There's just something wrong with that boy." Then the art teacher remembered one warm afternoon when Paul had fallen asleep in his class. Paul's face was white, with thin blue veins under the skin. The boy's face looked tired and lined, like an old man's. His eyebrows moved up and down, even in his sleep. After he left the meeting, Paul ran down the hill from the school, whistling. He was late for his job at the concert hall. Paul was an usher there. He showed people to their seats. He carried messages for them. He brought them their programs with a polite bow. Everyone thought he was a charming boy and the best usher at the hall. When Paul reached the concert hall that evening, he went immediately to the dressing room. About six boys were already there. Paul began changing his clothes with excited hands. He loved his green uniform with the gold pockets and design. Paul rushed into the concert hall as soon as he had changed clothes. He ran up and down the hall, helping people. He became more and more excited. His face became pink, and his eyes seemed larger and very bright. He looked almost handsome. At last, everyone was seated. The orchestra began to play, and Paul sat down with a sigh of relief. The music seemed to free something in Paul's spirit. Then a woman came out and began to sing. She had a rich, strong soprano voice. Paul felt truly happy for the first time that day. At the end of the concert, Paul went back to the dressing room. After he had changed his clothes again, he went outside the concert hall. He decided to wait for the singer to come out. While he waited, he looked across the street to the large hotel called the Schenley. All the important people stayed at the Schenley when they visited Pittsburgh. Paul had never been inside it, but he used to stand near the hotel's wide glass doors. He liked to watch the people enter and leave. He believed if he could only enter this kind of a hotel, he would be able to leave school, his teachers, and his ordinary gray life behind him forever. At last, the singer came out of the concert hall. Paul followed her as she walked to the hotel. He was part of a large crowd of admirers who had waited to see her. When they all reached the hotel, she turned and waved. Then the doors opened, and she disappeared inside. Paul stared into the hotel as the doors slowly closed. He could feel the warm, sweet air inside, and for a moment he felt part of a golden world of sparkling lights and marble floors. He thought about the mysterious dishes of food being served in the hotel's dining room. He thought about green bottles of wine growing cold in silver buckets of ice. He turned away from the hotel and walked home. He thought of his room, with its horrible yellow wallpaper, the old bed, with its ugly red cover. He shook his head. Soon he was walking down the street where he lived. All the houses on Cordelia Street were exactly alike. Middle-class businessmen had bought them for their families. All their children went to school and to church. They loved arithmetic. As Paul walked toward his house, he felt as if he were drowning in ugliness. He longed for cool colors and soft lights and fresh flowers. He didn't want to see his ugly bedroom or the cold bathroom with its cracked mirror and gray floor. Paul went around to the back of his father's house. He found an open window and climbed into the kitchen. Then he went downstairs to the basement. He was afraid of rats, but he did not want to face his own bedroom. Paul couldn't sleep. He sat on the floor and stared into the darkness until morning came. The following Sunday, Paul had to go to church with his family. Afterwards, everyone came home and ate a big dinner. Then all the people who lived on Cordelia Street came outside to visit each other. After supper, Paul asked his father if he could visit a friend to get some help with his arithmetic. Paul left the house with his school books under his arm, but he didn't go to his friend's house. Instead, he went to see Charlie Edwards. Charlie was a young actor. Paul liked to spend as much time as he could at the theater, where Charlie Edwards and his group acted in their plays. It was only at the theater and the concert hall that Paul felt really alive. The moment he smelled the air of these places, he felt like a prisoner suddenly set free. As soon as he heard the concert hall orchestra play, he forgot all the ugly, unpleasant events in his own life. Paul had discovered that any kind of music awakened his imagination. Paul didn't want to become a musician, however. He didn't want to become an actor, either. He only wanted to be near people who were actors and musicians. He wanted to see the kind of life these artists led. Paul found the schoolroom even worse after a night at the theater or the concert hall. He hated the school's bare floors and cracked walls. He turned away from his dull teachers in their plain clothes. He tried to show them how little he thought of them and the studies they taught. He would bring photographs of all the actors he knew to school. He would tell the other students that he spent his evenings with these people at elegant restaurants. Then he would announce that he was going away to Europe or to California or to Egypt for a while. The next day, he would come to school smiling nervously. His sister was ill, he would say, but he was still planning to make his trip next spring. Paul's problems at school became worse. Even after the meeting with his teachers, things did not get better. He told them he had no time to study grammar and arithmetic. He told them he had to help the actors in the theater. They were old friends of his. Finally, his teachers went to Paul's father. He took Paul out of school and made him get a job. He told the manager at the concert hall that Paul could not work there anymore. His father warned the doorman at the theater not to let Paul into the place. And Charlie Edwards promised Paul's father not to see Paul again. All the actors at the theater laughed when they heard about the stories Paul had been telling. The women thought it was funny that Paul had told people he took them out to nice restaurants and sent them flowers. They agreed with the teachers and with his father that Paul's was a bad case.
And that is our show for today. I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.